Hi, it's John Horn. I'm in Park City, Utah, covering the Sundance Film Festival. Coming up on tomorrow's edition of The Frame, we're going to talk with Carlos Lopez Estrada. He was at Sundance a couple of years ago with a movie called Blindspotting. His new movie is called Summertime. It is based on the poems of a couple of dozen young poets in Los Angeles. He took their very personal stories and formed a narrative film around their poems. We also are going to hear from two of the poets in the film. That's on tomorrow's edition of The Frame. Here's today with our substitute host and pinch hitter, Stephen Cuevas.
From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, in for John Horn. On today's show, the director of the 2015 documentary Kobe Bryant's Muse reflects on working with the LA Lakers superstar. And Hillary Clinton joins John Horn at the Sundance Film Festival to talk about the new documentary that chronicles her life in politics, including debates against Donald Trump.
Do I turn around and say, back off, you creep? I'm not intimidated by you, which I knew would have polarizing effects. Like, you know, if she can't handle him, how's she going to handle Vladimir Putin? Well, I would add, a heck of a lot better than the current guy.
It's The Frame. We'll be right back. It's another somber day in Los Angeles, following the sudden death of Lakers legend Kobe Bryant in a helicopter crash yesterday morning. He was 41. Eight other people, including his 13-year-old daughter Gianna, were also killed. Joining us to remember Kobe Bryant and his legacy is filmmaker Gautam Chopra, director and executive producer of the 2015 documentary Kobe Bryant's Muse. He started by telling me who Kobe Bryant was as a person and what he represented to fans.
On the court and as a basketball player, he was relentless and competitive and willful. And, you know, I think that's really kind of what drove his success. I'd say off the court, a lot of those same qualities, you know, even as a collaborator, you know, and he was very much a collaborator on the project that we worked with. He was not passive, you know, in terms of his participation. He had a strong point of view on pretty much everything, obviously, including himself. And so at times it was agonizing working with him because he was exhausting. But he was exhilarating in the same way to be around, because he really did drive you and push you. And there was no version of compromise in him. There was definitely a softer side. And you got to see that probably most notably in his relationship with his daughters. He was a very engaged father. And I think he was also a very engaged husband. You know, I got to know Kobe towards the end of his playing career. And so he was transitioning out and he was thinking about life afterwards. And so I think those roles, you know, in particular, a father, a husband, and an artist really, were really important to him. And there was, I think in those roles, there was a humility that, you know, probably was not something you saw in the competitor in Kobe.
Well, your film begins by detailing what really could have been the end for Kobe Bryant's career, and it's a fairly serious Achilles heel injury that might have cut his career short in 2013. When he's talking about it in the film, he's reflecting on what could have been the end. Why did you want to start the film there? And not only that, but also use his recovery as kind of almost like a subplot in the narrative?
I mean, quite literally, I think the injury was a catalyst for him in terms of thinking. I think he had been thinking about life after basketball, but I think, you know, there's a sort of mortality check that comes with an injury like that for a professional athlete, especially at, you know, at his age at the time. And so that injury gave us a starting point. And so all of these other things that he wanted to talk about, like, you know, he called it Muse, these people that had influenced him, these ideas, and this sort of search for greatness, we needed a structure. And all of a sudden, the injury and the road back from that injury, will he or won't he succeed, gave us, you know, that structure.
Well, of course, in Greek mythology, Achilles is this great warrior who's invincible, except for that one thing, and that's his heel. And he dies when he's pierced by an arrow in the heel. What did you learn about Kobe's own vulnerabilities, both as a player and as a man, his own Achilles heels, if you will?
You know, Kobe always prided himself early on in his career that he was kind of emotionless, like he was the Black Mamba. He was untouchable in terms of like his emotional game. And I think just again, the function of age and the function of a life now that had daughters and, you know, were growing up and he wanted to be more around. So all of a sudden those road trips were much harder, you know, those things where he never would think twice about it because it was all basketball all the time was, you know, it was a vulnerability, I guess.
Well, let's hear a clip from the documentary, Kobe Bryant's Muse. And it's where Kobe speaks about what he calls Mamba mentality.
And I've always had some of my best performances on the road. You know, when fans boo, I absolutely love it. I thrive on it. They don't understand who I am. Not only am I comfortable being an outsider, that has become a source of motivation for me. So when I go to these places and you boo, it actually comforts me. Yeah.
That Black Mamba veneer really dissolves in one moment in the film when he's speaking pretty openly about his infidelity to his wife, Vanessa, and the miscarriage that the couple suffered shortly after the birth of their first daughter. How difficult or not was it to get Kobe to speak openly on these things?
It didn't take much. Again, like once you're in a way, like over time, obviously that developed that sort of trust. I also think that Kobe was a very smart and instinctive storyteller, and he understood that in order, you know, for anyone to really engage or care about this, he was going to have to be honest. He was going to have to talk about the blemishes, you know, in his life. And so he understood that. We had the reality of a legal situation. There were legal ramifications around how that case, you know, went and how it ended up getting settled. So we had to deal with that.
And that's the 2004 rape allegation case. Yes.
Yes. There was a lot of navigating around that and just sort of like thinking through like what's the right way of dealing with this and what's the way we can deal with this, again, because of some of the restrictions. He was a willing partner in that. Like he was, you know, like every other part of the film, he had a point of view in that and he wanted to be part of like decoding that and figuring out what the right way of dealing with it was.
Before I let you go, is there anything else you would like to add today?
It's still sort of shocking to me and to think about, but obviously I think his legacy, you know, will be profound and far beyond the basketball court. You know, I think he had so much left to do, and I think that's one of the great sad things. And I know just, you know, again, as a parent, kind of the bright future, not just Gigi had, but all of his girls had and that, you know, he won't get to see. So
Gautam Chopra is the director of the 2015 Showtime documentary, Kobe Bryant's Muse, about, of course, the late Kobe Bryant. Gautam, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Kobe Bryant's Muse can be seen on Hulu and Showtime On Demand. Up next on The Frame, John Horne's conversation with Hillary Clinton and documentary filmmaker Nanette Burstein at the Sundance Film Festival. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm Stephen Cuevas, sitting in for John Horne. A new 4-hour documentary series about former First Lady, U.S. Senator, and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton premiered this weekend at the Sundance Film Festival. Clinton and the filmmaker were interviewed there by our own John Horne. So, John, what's the background on this documentary?
This is a 4-part series that is directed by Nanette Burstein, and it's composed of two basic things. One is Hillary's campaign during the 2016 election shot a lot of backstage stuff. There are speeches, there are conversations, there's prep for debates, almost 2,000 hours of footage. Nanette Burstein, the director of the documentary, was given this footage, and she decided that if she did new interviews with Hillary Clinton and a bunch of other people, she could use that footage and tell the story not only of the campaign, but also of Hillary Clinton's personal and professional life.
And who do you reckon this film is made for?
I mean, I think if you followed the 2016 campaign closely, you're still going to find and hear a lot of new things that you didn't know before. I think if you didn't really appreciate how qualified Hillary Clinton was for the presidency, even if you don't like her politics, you're going to be amazed at how capable and impressive she is as a person. And I think it's going to also offer really interesting insights into a marriage with a lot of problems, fidelity being one of them.
And finally, how was her presence at Sundance received generally from festival goers?
We have interviewed a lot of celebrities over the years at Sundance. In a couple of minutes, Viggo Mortensen's coming in, and later today, Julie Louis-Dreyfus is coming in. I don't think I've been around a person who had that aura of power and celebrity that Hillary Clinton had. There is just this feeling in the room, there are a couple hundred people watching, of kind of awe of who she is and what she's accomplished. So yes, it was pretty special to interview her. I won't say I was terribly nervous, but I certainly knew that I had to do a good job.
All right, and here's that session from this weekend at the Sundance Film Festival.
The director of Hillary, Nanette Burstein, and the truly remarkable subject, Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Hillary, Nanette's pitch was to interview you and other people who worked on the campaign and are close to the campaign and close to you. What was the story that you wanted to tell through those interviews that maybe the footage couldn't tell?
You know, John, I have to take my mind back to when Nanette basically proposed making this bigger than the campaign and really focusing on my life, but using my life as a springboard into the women's movement, our political system, and these other themes. And I obviously knew I'd be interviewed. I was interviewed for 35 hours. But, you know, she had free rein to interview anybody that would interview with her. And so you'll see people literally that I grew up with or that I went to high school or college or law school or that were colleagues. And then a lot of people that, you know, she chose to interview to fill in the story. So I was on board.
Were there certain people that were hard to get to go on camera? And who would you put at the top of that list? And even within that list, who are the people that really presented you with the greatest challenge in terms of how you're going to ask difficult questions?
Well, the hardest people to get were all of the conservative voices. We went out to 30, 40 people that overlapped with Secretary Clinton's life from the 90s onward, from Newt Gingrich to Lindsey Graham to even more moderate politicians like Susan Collins, Olympia Snow, and they just all said no. And, you know, and I would follow up, too, because I am not very good at taking no as an answer. And, like, for example, Newt Gingrich, who I was really, really wanted to include his voice, whatever, you know, however interesting that would have been, because he was a big part of her time as First Lady and being on the opposition and leading that charge. So we sent a letter formally, and his sister does his PR, and they, you know, very diplomatically said no, and then someone gave me his cell phone number, and I called him, and I couldn't believe he picked up. I was like, "Oh, hello! you don't know who I am. You don't know this number." But and then I just launched into my pitch, and he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I know what your offer was," and he said, "I would rather stick a needle in my eye." I said, "Okay, I don't think there's a lot of convincing to be done now."
Hillary, there are so many slights in this film. It's like bleeding to death from 1,000 paper cuts. The little things that are said in passing that seem in isolation terrible, but in accumulation horrific. And that's the idea of how women law students were treated at Yale. The judge who asked you to twirl around while you're at the podium. There's a line that Chris Matthews has that I won't even dignify by repeating. A TV announcer calls you the ambitious yuppie from hell. All of those little things over the course of the documentary, to me, made a very lasting impact of what is casually said but is so hurtful.
You're right, John. And I think Nanette did a masterful job of weaving that in. Because again, it's not just about me. And the relentless belittling and demeaning and dismissing is often either ignored or absorbed in a way that you don't fully appreciate the impact of as you move through your life. So one of my concerns is, you know, you have to develop such tough skin you don't want to be battered and hurt, broken by a constant belittlement, but you also don't want to be so impervious that you can't absorb whatever legitimate criticism might be coming your way. So very early on, I kind of developed this mantra to take criticism seriously, but not personally. That doesn't include, you know, the harassment and the insults, because that's in a different, you know, category. But a lot of the language that is still used today about women in the public arena has the same impact. And I just hope that this, I hope that this documentary, as people watch it, will spark conversations like the one we're having, so that it's not off limits to say, wait a minute, you know, why is this still part of the ongoing dialogue about women's roles and women's rights? And of course, I think we're going through a real backlash, so I think the conversation is even more important.
I don't want to quote Bart Simpson in such a serious conversation, but I'm going to.
Please do.
Bart Simpson says, and he didn't make this up, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And there's a moment in the fourth episode where you're in a debate and Donald Trump is stalking you. He's physically behind you. And in the documentary, you say in real time that you're aware that he's standing behind you. Yep. And as you're speaking about some very important issue, you're playing out all these scenarios. What would happen if I turn around? I can't, because this is how it will play. But what if I ignore him? This is how it will play. And that seems to be a constant theme throughout the documentary, that if you go one direction, people will criticize you for doing that, and another group of people will criticize you for not doing it, that you're stuck at so many points in your life that any decision is going to have a polarizing effect.
Yeah, because, you know, that word polarizing, I think about it a lot, because clearly it's often the way that I'm described. Some of the people that Nanette tried to get to be interviewed for this film are certainly a lot more polarizing than I think I am. But is Newt Gingrich described as polarizing? He may be described as a lot of things, but he's hardly ever described as polarizing. And the incident that John just referred to in that second debate, you know, I knew exactly what he was doing. You know, it was alpha male writ large. You want to know what a president looks like? This is what a president looks like. Not this woman. Not this girl. And I'm going to show you how dominant I am. And so I'm up there and I'm going, okay, what do I do? Do I turn around and say, back off, you creep? I'm not intimidated by you, which I knew would have polarizing effects. And it would also raise the issue, like, you know, if she can't handle him, how's she going to handle Vladimir Putin? Well, I would add, a heck of a lot better than the current guy. So, you know, because, you know, I've been in the public eye for a long time, but even before I practiced law, I tried lawsuits and all that. I have worked with and against countless men who come in all sizes and shapes, all sorts of hairstyles, and they're judged on who they are. But when a woman walks into that arena, everybody unloads on her every single feeling or reaction that they have about women in the public eye. So what I did, if those of you saw it, was do nothing. You know, just like I did back when I took the law school test. Just do the job. And hopefully people will say, hey, you know, I'd rather have somebody who is not acting like that, dealing with the serious problems we have in the world.
Up next on The Frame, more of John Horn's conversation with Hillary Clinton and filmmaker Nanette Burstein at the Sundance Film Festival. And now back to John's conversation with Hillary Clinton and filmmaker Nanette Burstein, recorded this weekend at the Sundance Film Festival. The former First Lady and Secretary of State is the subject of the new four-part Hulu documentary, Hillary.
Nanette, Bill and Hillary's marriage is a central part of the story, especially in the latter half of the documentary series.
Why did you think it was important? And I want to ask you about interviewing Bill Clinton and asking him about his marriage and what those interviews were like.
Well, I thought it was important for several reasons. I mean, one, they have been partners in many ways for 50 plus years. So part of it was a love story. The other thing, you know, we do spend half hour of the series on the impeachment, the Monica Lewinsky incident, and I tried to deal with it very much from a personal perspective. And not because there's this salacious interest, but because so much of Secretary Clinton's life following that was judged in her perception, particularly if she was running for office, when she was running for Senate, when she was running in 08, and very much when she was running 16. I can't tell you the number of educated, liberal female friends of mine who would say to me, oh, I can't vote for her. She didn't leave her husband.
Hillary, what is it like watching that footage of your husband offering up his explanation, rationalization for what he did with Monica Lewinsky, and about how I think it's fair to say that you are paying the price for his sins?
Well, that's pretty dramatic. You couldn't have done a documentary about my life and not done a documentary about my marriage. And like every marriage I know, we've had ups and downs, but ours have all played out in public after 1992 or so. You know, it was difficult, talking about it, answering questions. You know, that is, not my favorite way to spend the afternoon. But I was very committed to being as forthcoming as I could be in working with Nanette, and Bill was too.
There are two impeachment trials in the series. One is when you go to Washington to work on the impeachment of Richard Nixon, obviously the impeachment of Bill Clinton. There's another impeachment trial going on right now that didn't make your deadline, Nanette. But if you were being interviewed now for this documentary about what's happening in Washington, what would your thoughts be?
Yeah, I did. I worked on the impeachment inquiry staff of the House Judiciary Committee in 1974. And among my tasks as a very young new lawyer was studying what the framers meant by impeachment in the Constitution, particularly what does high crimes and misdemeanor mean. One of my other jobs was listening to the tapes and comparing the transcriptions the White House gave us with what was actually on the tape, which is very similar to what we are experiencing with this impeachment. And you listen to this, and you could literally listen to Richard Nixon, and it was obvious that he was obstructing justice, he was abusing power, he was defying the Congress. And once the House Judiciary Committee voted that, Republican leaders in the Senate went to see Nixon in the White House and said, you will be impeached, you should resign, because there is proof of abuse of power, obstruction of justice, contempt of Congress. And Nixon did. So, fast forward to where we are now. I don't think it could be any clearer that what the founders feared is at the core of the articles of impeachment against Trump. And, look, you don't have Republicans like there were in 1974 to say, this has to end and you have to go.
Hillary, the end of this documentary, and I'll share a personal story, left my wife and I in a spirited debate. I found it somewhat pessimistic. She found it optimistic. But in terms of what you think are the takeaways, what do you hope people take away from it? And how would you assess that optimistic, pessimistic take that my wife and I had?
That's fascinating, John. I don't want to polarize your
maybe family.
It's already polarized.
Oh, well. I remain fundamentally optimistic because I really can't believe that we're going to destroy the greatest experiment in self-government that the world has ever seen. I just can't believe that. And so I don't believe it, and therefore I wake up every day thinking about What more do we need to do to protect what has worked and to fix what has not? And so for me, I think there are several takeaways. One, I do hope that there is a debate about women's roles and women's lives and the progress we have been making, but you know, some of the remaining challenges that we face. I also hope it sparks a conversation about our politics. How did we get to the point where we literally cannot make the decisions that will protect our planet, create more economic opportunity, provide, you know, universal health care? I mean, I think we have a huge existential decision to make this November. And I said it yesterday, I'll say it again, whoever the Democratic nominee is, get behind that person. You've got to be committed.
Nanette Burstein, Hillary Clinton, thank you for sharing your film, your time with us.
Thank you.
That was John Horn with Hillary Clinton and filmmaker Nanette Burstein, taped this weekend at the Sundance Film Festival. The four-part documentary titled Hillary premieres March 6th on Hulu. And that's all for today. I'm Stephen Cuevas. Thanks for listening. We're back here tomorrow at the Moen Broadcast Center.